Your On the Mark podcast audio is coming up. On the Mark Online is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, the Auto Plaza, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and the Kia dealership, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I'm worried about you today.
You're worried about me today? Why would you possibly be worried about me today?
Because your idol in broadcasting is on the show today.
One of them. Actually, I have two of my idols in broadcasting on the show today.
Oh, yeah, who's the other one? All right.
Myself.
There you go. I think coming off as arrogant doesn't help you.
That's right. I found it funny, and that's all that really matters. If you can't amuse yourself, no one else is going to laugh at you.
Interesting theory.
Isn't it, though?
You put a lot of thought into this theory.
Maybe too much.
Today's show, by the way, brought to you by our great friends at Kratzer Insurance. Auto, home, life, business insurance. Service and price mean everything to them. Why? Because they know it means everything to you. Our good friends at Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. They've been serving the greater Susquehanna Valley now for better than five decades. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. One of the truly outstanding broadcasters, regardless of sport, joins us in just about 15 minutes. That's Paul Page, the voice of the Indianapolis 500. Now, I'm not going to get into this with him, but you go back 37 years as to how he got the job. And it really is a tough story as to how it happened. He had come out of college and had been working, and he got a job in Indianapolis. He'd been an Army brat, moved around a lot. Comes out of college, I'm going to say Oklahoma State, somewhere in there. And he takes a job in Indianapolis. Well, he takes a job in Indianapolis, and I mean, the best thing going in Indianapolis in the early 70s was not the Pacers. Okay? Colts weren't there yet. It was the Indianapolis 500. Well, he gets himself on the broadcast. He's in the pits or something like that. And distinguishes himself. Now, the guy that was the legend that had been for decades the voice of the 500, Sid Collins, really liked Paul Page. And remember, this is the time when the Indianapolis 500 was tape delayed, and thus, if you wanted to find out what was going on, you had to listen to the radio broadcast. And Sid Collins was a master, a pro's pro. Well, when Sid Collins was going to retire, Paul had been privately told, from what I understand, that he would be the next voice of the Indy 500.
Okay.
And Sid Collins liked him a lot. He said, hey, great, you know. March or April of 77, Sid Collins finds out, I believe from the Mayo Clinic, that he has Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. And he confides to Page, basically, that he can't take it and that he wants to take his own life. And on May 2nd of 77, Sid Collins did take his own life. Hung himself. And Paul Page became the voice of the Indy 500. which he already been assured ahead of time he was going to get the job down the road anyway. But that's how he got the job. It's a hard way to do it, man.
I remember him doing it in the 70s and 80s. I didn't know the story on how. That's, as you said, they were rebroadcasts that were also edited for time on ABC, so you would lose parts of the race because they needed to fit it in that primetime window. So I remember many times growing up going to Ricketts Glen and Lake Jean and listening to it on the radio as we were fishing. And Paul Page was the voice I heard.
Yes. So, I mean, now that's not a story we're going to get into. I mean, there's a lot more to talk about than 37 years ago. Okay. All right, I'll ask him about what drew him to motorsports, because I think he can announce anything he wants.
And basically has.
Yes, and not really.
Well, in the motorsports.
He hasn't done any football, basketball, and that stuff.
No, but in the motorsports side, though.
Yeah. Here's a snowmobile race. Call it. Okay, great.
You know, he did NHRA a lot for ESPN over the last decade or so.
Right, but he's been put into the motorsport mold. And he's outstanding. And we're thrilled to have him on for the first time in the show. We'll talk about the fact that in IndyCar, nobody knows how to start. We'll talk about that. What else are we supposed to talk about?
I think that's more of an equipment issue than a personal issue.
Yeah.
I think.
Nothing to do with it. Just because they lose all the I am going to ask him about the number of drivers that have crossed over to NASCAR. Because that's an issue.
Yeah. And then if one comes back and wins it, look out.
But in the 60s and 70s, and into the 80s, the stars of racing. Richard Petty was not the star of racing.
That's true.
Richard Petty won 200, exactly, 200 on the nose, 200 NASCAR races, including 7 Daytona 500s. Yet, the established stars of racing in Richard Petty's era were Mario Andretti, A.J. Foyt, Gordon Johncock, Rick Mears, Johnny Rutherford, Al Unser Sr., which then, of course, dovetailed into Al Jr. Right? These were the stars of racing, where once in a while, Mario Andretti would decide, you know what, I think I'll try my hand at the Daytona 500. And guess what Mario did? He won. A.J. Foyt, you know, I think I'll try the Daytona 500. Guess what? He won. A, each had great equipment, but B, Indianapolis, that circuit had the superior drivers. They had the star drivers. They had the best drivers. So if one of them decided to flip over and go to Daytona, they won. Which means they beat Richard Petty, and they beat David Pearson, and they beat Bobby Allison, and they beat Cale Yarborough and the whole deal. I mean, they go in there, get in the car, go, see ya. That's not the case today. And we'll talk to Paul Page about that and whether maybe the scales are changing a little bit and changing back. Because, you know, Tony Stewart cut his teeth IndyCar, went to NASCAR. Juan Pablo Montoya, of course, he went over there. I think, what, didn't Johnny Andretti do it too?
Johnny Andretti spent several years in NASCAR and then hopped back and forth, actually, for a while. He was, I think, besides Stewart, John Andretti may have been, and I'm not sure the years, but may have been the last one to pull off the double on Memorial Day weekend. I know Stewart Robbie did Gordon. Successfully.
Robbie Gordon did it.
Yes, Robbie
successfully
Gordon.
Successfully means you won.
Well, successfully means you put in all 1,100 miles, and I think Tony Stewart's the only one to have done that.
Right. And Tony Stewart's a great driver. And I remember Tony Stewart was criticized so much for going to a smaller track and getting into a crash and hurting himself and so forth. He does so much for the sport by doing that. I mean, when you get out there and you don't think you're big enough you know, I don't need to go there. I don't need to go to Sealands Grove. Like, you're just, you know, look, I, you know, hey, and you show up. It's great for the sport. Just my opinion. His sponsors may feel differently.
Now, the only thing I hated a couple of years ago, he was supposed to have been one of the additional drivers on one of the teams for the 500 late, and they couldn't deal with the they couldn't work it out in the contract, and it had to do, and I don't remember if it was Chevy or Ford, but it had to do with the engine. The engine was a different brand, a different model than what he was supposed to have been running under contract. And it's just a shame when a guy like that has contractual issues because of the engine manufacturer.
Yeah, but you, guess what? Those guys are a walking billboard, okay?
That's true.
So you know what? All they are walking billboards, okay? Their cars are loaded with sponsorship. Their jumpsuits are loaded with sponsorships. And guess what? If there's a certain chassis and a certain engine he's got to be running in, there's a certain chassis and a certain engine he has to run in. I mean, if you're going to be, you know, if you want to be totally independent and go out there with nothing on your car and pull a Ricky Bobby and it just says me on it,
with a picture of a tiger or a cougar.
Okay, then you can be independent and do whatever you want.
That's a good point. Yeah. You do have a responsibility to the guys on the car and on the that are paying the bills.
Yeah, you know, it's if your contract says I run Goodyear no matter what, you're running Goodyear. If your contract says you're running Firestone no matter what, you are running Firestone. No matter what car you're in, because you know, that's how it's funded. That's how it's paid for. Racing is an extremely expensive sport. That's one of the things, you know, the NBA's talked about maybe putting sponsor logos on uniforms. See, and that bothers me. I don't want to see the four major sports, NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL. I don't want to see them lapsing toward looking like NASCAR. NASCAR, it's accepted. You know, we turn on the TV, we expect that. In fact, it would look weird if they walked out there and had nothing on. All of a sudden, it's like, hey, I'm wearing a blue suit. Like, okay, a blue jumpsuit. Where are all the sponsors? Did you lose all your sponsors?
You know, you were talking last year, USA Today did a breakdown of how much it cost to run the Indianapolis 500. This is just one race. Right. And the price tag is just under $1 million for one race.
Exactly right. And if you're a sponsor, you want to make sure that you're involved in the Indianapolis 500. That will get more eyeballs than any race during the course of the year. Maybe Daytona might get more. You'd have to tell me about the ratings.
No, I think that's a – no, I agree with you there. I think Daytona would see probably a little bit more.
And part of it's February. Part of it is the February part where, you know, they're smart. They put Daytona in February where – especially people in the northern states and the northeast, there's like no inclination to go out to the garden and work. The garden is underneath 2 feet of snow. So you're going to be more inclined to sit there and watch something on TV.
I think that's why, as race fans, we get upset when a guy like a Kurt Busch comes up and crosses over and they have one car. It's like, well, why do you have one car for him? Why can't you have a backup car? Well, that one car cost an added $1 million.
Right.
And then the backup car, by the way, is probably close to another $1 million. I mean, when they have a wreck at Indianapolis, the minimum is $250,000 in costs.
Right. And for Kurt Busch, he better be really good in qualifying, and he better be really good in practice because there's no other car to jump into.
That's it. He's got to be clean. And that car was already wrecked once.
And the line to run, I believe, the line to run Indianapolis for IndyCar, based on the fact they're going, what, about 35 miles per hour faster, is a little bit different than the NASCAR line. And how you race is different as well. Open wheels are more exciting with more passing instead of the bump and grind where you, like, hit somebody in the back and, like, you tailgate to within an inch, if not right on the bumper. IndyCar, there's a speed and a grace to passing that is beautiful to watch.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
When it comes to insurance, let's face it, the options and the sources keep changing. It gets confusing. Do you really know what you're getting? Better yet, do you know what you're not getting? Save time and save your mind with a simple call to the Kratzer Insurance Agency of Mount Pleasant Mills or Northumberland. For 51 years, the Kratzer Insurance Agency has been keeping the Susquehanna Valley insured and protected from whatever comes our way. If your policy is up for renewal, or you suffer the disappointment of cut-rate insurance deals on the internet or over the phone, then listen. Don't sacrifice personal service. The Kratzer Insurance Agent, your independent agent, has your best interest in mind. Of course they have competitive prices.
Hi, this is Kim Ebright. Call us, stop in, or visit us online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Standing together against whatever. Family, friendship, security. The Kratzer Insurance Agency.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. Auto, home, business, life insurance. At Kratzer Insurance, it's a simple motto. It's something they believe in. Okay, service and price mean everything to them because they know it means everything to you. To serve the Valley for more than 50 years, that is Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. One quick note for football fans out there. The Nittany Lions homecoming game with Northwestern on September 27th will be a noon kickoff. It'll be a noon kickoff at Beaver Stadium, so we now know 5 of the 12 kickoffs for the upcoming season. Very pleased to be joined now by someone I have immense respect for, one of the truly outstanding broadcasters and the voice of the Indianapolis 500 and the Indy Racing Series, Paul Page. Paul, welcome. It is great to have you with us.
Well, thank you a lot. Thank you for the compliment. I appreciate that.
Well deserved. Let's get to the series itself. What for you in when you get to this month, and the month means Indianapolis, what, in the end, based on your decades of work there, what does the month mean to you?
Well, the month has always been special to me ever since I first attended the race in 1960. And I was living on the North Shore of Chicago at that time. I'm a military brat, so that's where we were assigned then. And I told everybody, I got to go back to Indianapolis and be part of that race. And then I tried for about a week to be a race driver and figured out that wasn't in the cards. And then I worked for one of the teams as kind of a gopher. And I loved radio. I'd always loved radio, even back before high school. But I wanted to be a DJ. I didn't realize I had a sports future. But it's always been family to me. And it is to everyone involved a very special pinnacle. I mean, you can talk about any other race in the world, but this one is held. I'm sitting right in the middle of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway right now. I almost have a 360-degree view of the racetrack and the inside the grandstands. In 1909, when they ran the first races here, they ran exactly the same configuration, 50 feet wide on the straightaway, 60 on the turns, 2.5 miles measured 3 feet from the inside white line. When they ran the first 500, exactly the same thing. And when they crossed the bricks to win the 98th running of this race on a week ahead Sunday, they will cross the same bricks that everyone before them has. It's special as a once a year meeting in this place.
I remember one time being in Indianapolis, and of course we had to see the track. I had to. And there were only two of us on the bus. And the bus driver stops and says, "You want to walk on the track?" I said, "You're darn right I want to walk on the track." And when you stand on the bricks, you feel that sense of history.
Yeah, I think everybody does, even those who are not particularly aware of all of the things that have happened here. But you get that sense. I mean, the mere fact that you're walking out onto paved bricks and you realize that in its original form, the entire track was that way, I don't think it takes much prompting from anyone else to look up at grandstands and you realize over 200, 250,000. At one time, I've heard guesstimates over 300,000. Of course, the configuration changes. I mean, but you stand there and you feel that. I don't have to tell you it's special. You get it on your own.
Yeah, no question about that. Now, something I talked about earlier in the show, there was a point in time where no matter what, you know, whether it was Andretti, Foyt, Mears, Rutherford, I mean, the list goes on and on. Even I don't care if it was Lloyd, Ruby, Gordon, Johncock, whatever, that the stars of the sport were the ones running that race. I mean, it was Andretti would go down to Daytona, he'd run it once, he'd win it. Foyt would go down to Daytona, run it once, and win it. In recent times, have they struggled at Indianapolis to have the star power it used to have, and is it starting to lapse back towards star power?
Well, I think there's no question. There was a concern about where the stars were going to come from and who were they. And the Speedway, through the previous Indy Racing League, tried to get that pendulum to tip more toward American drivers. But the reality was that America doesn't train racing drivers as well as, say, Brazil or England, where you can start. I mean, you can be in go-karts at age 7, and you can get in actual race cars at 15, 14 years old, Formula Ford, and now you're getting seat time, and that's a good deal of what this is about. Get in a good car, drive a lot of laps, you're going to get better. So that propels who's going to come here. Now, does it have the absolute pinnacle that it used to have? No, there's some peaks coming up around, but the whole nature of the sport has changed. I remember when I used to do the International Race of Champions. It was very easy to hold an IROC race. And you'd call the different sports, and the people that put it together would say, "Hey, I need this, this, and this." And then all of a sudden it got to be, there were so many races on any given weekend that you really couldn't get them out there. And even if you would convince them and find an open weekend, usually the owners started to say, no, that's an investment. I mean, it's not like the old days. But when I look at, you know, I'm looking at a third-generation Andretti. Marco's incredible. Foyt mm-hmm. is still fielding a car and loving every minute of it. You know, I see him on the road. A.J. Foyt is sitting there as part of a team, and Lord knows he doesn't have to. He's, you know, he's probably got more money than even you, so... you see all those stars. Are they new names? Yes, absolutely they are. But the generational changes happen. The new names come in, the younger drivers. This is a very difficult sport. And so the names that used to stay around a very long time can't do it anymore. It is too demanding to be able to do it. So you're going to see constant changes. And I think the Speedway is really coming back. And when I saw the Grand Prix here on Saturday and I looked at the crowd they got in for a Grand Prix, a truly unknown and everything, and how the crowd reacted to that, I realized once again that this sport is alive and well, and it still centers at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
I'm only going into my 15th year of broadcasting Penn State football, so I haven't quite earned Foyt money yet.
Nor will either of us ever.
ever. You and I both know the business. That's never going to happen. When I was listening to your broadcast on Sirius on Saturday, you were mm-hmm. talking about the Grand Prix. And one thing you kept pointing out was that people were sitting on the mounds all over the place. How important was it that kind of feel and that kind of location for that race?
Well, I think it's really important, and I'm really glad they did it. I used to, when I go, again, from the Chicago area, I'd go up to see a race at Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin, or at the Meadowdale Raceway, which is long, long since gone. That was the way you watched a road race. You walked corner to corner. You'd sit on a hillside. You'd watch for a while there. It's very much the way most natural terrain road courses are approached, like Laguna Seca, Road Atlanta, and the U.S. courses, and certainly the European courses, where the real fan wants to come in. I'm going to watch from turn one for a while. Then I'm going to wander down to station five because there's a lot going on there. And then I'll move on to this, and I'll be back to the finish line by the time the race is over. So those mounds, as subtle as they may be, were very important to the crowd having a place to sit and truly enjoy it. Of course, they also used the grandstands. It was kind of neat to see because the first turn of the Grand Prix is really the approach, the opposite approach to turn four of the oval. And folks were just jammed up there in turn four. I couldn't see all the way down to turn one, but I'm told the same thing occurred there and in the sweep around the south end. The viewing areas for the Grand Prix are really special.
Did you get a sense based on reaction? And I know, obviously, the start with the accident received a lot of publicity and so forth. But in terms of sponsorship, the feel for it and so forth, that the Grand Prix has some staying power there in the month of May.
Well, I was surprised right from the first practice day at the buzz that you felt. As the fans came out and got a good look at it on practice days, you know, they were satisfied with it. And then after the race, I come down about 20 minutes after the broadcast is over and just kind of wander in the pavilion behind the pagoda. And everybody was very excited about it. Of course, part of racing, too, is that you hang around, you know, and you might have a chance to see one of the drivers or something. But, I mean, the reaction to it by the fans was really excellent. And I had more than one say, I'm going right over to the ticket office and make sure I'm set for next year. So it worked out. They took a risk, and it paid for them.
I'd mentioned earlier about the glory days. Part of what they did, USAC, when they had the series at one point, is they tried to create a triple crown feel to it. And the triple crown was Indianapolis, Pocono, and Ontario. And, of course, Ontario as a track doesn't exist anymore. Are you sensing more buzz about the series and when it goes around the country and not just about Indianapolis? Because Pocono reemerged last year.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And remember, I've been out actually attending more as a fan, so I get a little different perspective from when you go as a journalist and are kind of locked into certain areas and you have to do so many specific duties. But, I mean, you know, we're there. We got Pocono, Indy. You got Sonoma now. So there's the full chance of hyping that. You know, the Triple Crown used to be worth $1 million to win it. Well, that's a long time ago. I think it ought to be worth $10 million. My bosses aren't going to like that I said that, but, you know, it'd be cool.
Yeah.
Kurt
Busch is going to run
really
this thing. Is
too.
The line different for NASCAR as opposed to IndyCar on this track?
I'm sorry. Ask that again, please.
Yeah. Is the line in terms of how you need to run this track?
Yeah,
is the line different for NASCAR and the Brickyard 400 as opposed to the line that is needed to run this thing in the Indy 500? Is there a difference in the line that's needed on this track?
NASCAR, the line's a little bit wider. It's essentially the same. You know, far-out approach, turn in, meet the turn at the apex, and exit and come as close to that wall on the exit as you can. NASCAR tends to diamond off the first turn, the short chute to the second turn. That is, they come in, they go up to that wall, and then come back down. They're heavy. They're 3,800-pound machines. So they're going to handle different. They're going to push different. And the ability to put a car alongside one another for NASCAR here is not as easy as an aerodynamic IndyCar is. So they create two entirely different lines and two entirely different races, obviously. The IndyCar, it's like a fighter jet. I mean, it's, you know, very, very precise. And if you hit your marks every time, you're going to go incredibly fast. But there isn't necessarily one line around here. I remember the year Roberto Guerrero sat on the pole. We've seen others do the same thing. Roberto never got near any of the walls. And you would say, well, that can't be fast because he's not running the car all the way out. And yet, here he is sitting on the pole with record speed. So those cars, you have to really trim them out. And now the little adjustment screws on the wings and everything, where they used to be like a national fine thread, now many of them are actually hand lathe because they need a finer thread so that they can make the smaller adjustment, because it is so sensitive to different aerodynamic effects.
Give me the idea what experience means at these speeds on this track. You have great drivers across the board, but we see enough repeat winners at this place. What does experience mean based on your experience watching them?
Well, Indy requires, because the schedule is not casual. You get out on the regular series races, and it's a kind of a given schedule. You're going through a regular routine, and everybody, team, driver, everybody knows where you need to be throughout the day and throughout the race, and because the distances are all similar. Well, now, here we're going to go 300 miles further than they've gone this year, more than that, in fact. So now you're looking at Indy, for example, for qualifying. You have to start your timing very early on this Saturday when you're ready to go. You've got to make sure that you have everything checked. You've talked to the right tech people. You've got the right amount of fuel in the car. You put it in the right place in the line. Then you've got to go qualify. If it didn't work, you've got to go over and put it back in again. That kind of precision with a veteran's knowledge, and not just a veteran driver, but a veteran manager and a veteran team, is a lot easier if you've done it a lot of times. In the race itself, absolutely, because, again, the distance is further than we've seen this year, and one of the longer, obviously the longer distance of the year, but knowing how to place the car throughout the race. I mean, so often you hear them say, don't try to win this in the first couple of laps, and you see drivers like Rick Mears on his win one time went from a lap down to the win because tactically everybody understood what was needed to actually get to the finish line first, and that's where being a veteran pays off.
Let's go with the broadcast part, and then I'll let you go. I mean, when I do a Penn State football broadcast, it's Jack Hamm and myself sitting in the booth, and the two of us are talking, going through the game, and once in a while we'll go down to a sideline reporter, Lauren Crisp, will get an update on something, but it's the two of us. When you're doing an Indy radio broadcast with pit crews, turns, things like that, give me an idea the mechanics and the precision that goes into making it sound as flawless as it does, because to us listening, it sounds flawless.
Well, thank goodness, because it never sounds flawless in the headsets, as you can imagine, because I'm always hearing what the other reporters are saying, what they're asking for, what they're doing. Your playing field is 100 yards. My playing field is 2.5 miles. You're playing two teams against one another, and I'm playing 33. I'm really covering both a sporting event and a news event at the same time. I can't do it without the team. And so having everybody, we do a lot of coordination, especially in the pits. Where are you going to be at the start? How will you guys change as the race progresses? Same thing with the corners. Now, the advantage is I can hear the whole team in my right ear, and if they shout they have something, then we get them right on the air. But it's pretty casual in a football booth, and I like that. But I like the intense pressure that you get during a 500-mile race and coordinating that terrific team. And if you didn't have a team that was really working together, you would not have a good race. That's an absolute.
Absolutely. And anybody who has Sirius, by the way, it's Sirius 213 if you pick them up. But Paul, fabulous. I appreciate the time. And again, with great respect for your work, as always.
I appreciate that. Thank you for having me on. It's great to be here. I got a buddy over there in Harrisburg called Mike Dunn. Did a lot of drag races with him, so I'm familiar with the area.
Yeah, it's great, and hopefully we'll get to see you face-to-face here at some time. Good luck coming up.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Paul Page from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
I had thought about playing Jim Nabors coming out of that, but I figured you're going to get sick of that by the end of May, so I'll save it for another day. You're welcome.
Aye, aye, aye. I think what they do, and the same thing, I've told Eli Gold this, because, you know, Eli is also the voice of Alabama football. And I've talked to Eli enough over the years, whether it's Penn State playing Alabama in football or, you know, at one point Eli was also doing Alabama basketball, and I'd run into Eli at a couple tournaments here and there and so forth. And I've told him, and the same thing to Paul Page, what they do in racing, whether it's the NASCAR network or IndyCar, is in a pure broadcast, the coordination that is needed, because if I recall what they do, Paul is upstairs, has an analyst with him. They have at least two reporters in the pits, maybe three. And then they have somebody in each turn. Now, when you're talking about 9 announcers in a race, right? And you're talking, as he said, 2.5 miles to cover. He says, you know, Steve, you have to cover 100 yards, you know. And he's absolutely right. It's right there in front of all of us to do. The coordination that is needed to pull it off and to make it sound flawless is really impressive. And I've listened to enough of it on the air where I've said this before, as you've heard me say it before, that I think the NASCAR and IndyCar, in terms of a pure broadcast, the coordination needed on that is more difficult, and they make it sound easy compared to what you hear anywhere else.
I'll tell you what's amazing is when you even listen to the, what I like to call the closed circuit version on the scanner frequency, when you hear the whole broadcast the way Paul was talking about in his right ear, then you have a real good appreciation for what's going on.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, we talk in TV all the time about, well, there's somebody talking to you and your ear is your talking. Well, he has that the entire time during the course of a race. It takes a real pro with great discipline and skill to make it sound so thoughtful and also flawless.